By contrast with science, in Buddhism there is no substantive philosophical discussion of how living organisms emerge from inanimate matter. In fact, there does not appear even to be an acknowledgement that this is a serious philosophical issue. At best, there is an implicit assumption that the emergence of living organisms from inanimate matter is simply a consequence of cause and effect over time, given a set of initial conditions and the laws of nature that govern all realms of existence. However, in Buddhism, there is a greater appreciation of the challenge of accounting for the emergence of sentient beings from what is essentially a non-sentient basis. This difference of concern suggests an interesting contrast between Buddhism and modern science, which may have partly to do with the complex historical, social, and cultural differences that underlie the development of these two investigative traditions. For modern science, at least from the philosophical point of view, the critical divide seems to be between inanimate matter and the origin of living organisms, while for Buddhism, the critical divide is between non-sentient matter and the emergence of sentient beings. We may even ask why there is this fundamental difference between the two traditions. One possible reason modern science perceives the critical divide to lie between inanimate matter and living organisms may have to do with the basic methodology of science. By this, I'm referring to reductionism, not so much as a metaphysical standpoint, but more as a methodological approach. The basic approach in science is to explain phenomena in terms of their simpler constituent elements. How can something like life emerge from non-life? At one of the Mind and Life conferences in Dharamsala, the Italian biologist Luigi Luisi, based in Zurich, told me of his team's research into the possibility of creating life in a laboratory. For if the current scientific theory of the origination of life from the complex configuration of inanimate matter is correct, there is nothing to prevent us from creating life in a lab once all the conditions are met. Buddhism draws the critical division differently, i.e., between sentience and non-sentience, because it is primarily interested in the alleviation of suffering and the quest for happiness. In Buddhism, the evolution of the cosmos and the emergence of the sentient beings within it, indeed effectively everything within the purview of the physical and life sciences, belong within the domain of the first of the Four Noble Truths, which the Buddha taught in his initial sermon. The Four Noble Truths state that within the realm of impermanent phenomena, there is suffering. Suffering has an origin, the cessation of suffering is possible, and there is a path to the cessation of suffering. As I see it, science falls within the scope of the first truth in that it examines the material bases of suffering, for it covers the entire spectrum of the physical environment, the container, as well as the sentient beings, the contained. It is in the mental realm, the realm of psychology, consciousness, the afflictions, and karma, that we find the second of the truths, the origin of suffering. The third and fourth truths, cessation and the path, are effectively outside the domain of scientific analysis in that they pertain primarily to what might be called philosophy and religion. This fundamental difference between Buddhism and science, whether the line is drawn between sentience and non-sentience or between living organisms and inanimate matter, has significant ramifications. Among them, a difference in how the two investigative traditions may regard consciousness. For biology, consciousness is a secondary issue, since it is a characteristic of a subset of living organisms rather than of all of life. In Buddhism, since the definition of living refers to sentient beings, consciousness is the primary characteristic of life.